The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Now it's time for the debrief. We're going to look back on some of the big stories of the week gone by. Today I'm joined by Europe correspondent for Euronews, Seán Murray, Professor of Politics at DCU, Donal O'Bacon, and columnist and author Carl Kinsella. Thank you all for coming in this Friday morning. We're going to start with the Oireachtas Committee on Drug Use this week recommending that possession of all drugs for personal use should be decriminalised. And that was a proposal not without controversy. Seán, what do you think of that idea?
Yeah, well, I mean, I first of all, I'd say that having covered those Oireachtas committees, they do have a lot of substance to them, you know, that they have experts there who know what they're talking about, who have experience in dealing with drug addiction and whether or not criminalising people for possession of small amounts of drugs, whether that actually works in terms of deterrence. So first of all, you'd sort of take these findings into account. And then the second thing is, I do understand that a person, if they are involved in taking drugs, that the last thing they need is a criminal record if they want to try to turn their life around in the future. And that includes travelling to other jurisdictions and also in terms of having a criminal record and trying to get a new job. That's a real preventative. And also is, it would maybe turn them off and trying out a new life because they think there's too many obstacles in the road ahead. Mm-hmm. I obviously understand that it could be a slippery slope because maybe you're turning a blind, too much of a blind eye to drug taking.
And it normalises, you know, what is ultimately risky behaviour.
Well, it may do, but I think people who want to engage in risky behaviour and taking drugs are going to do that anyway, if they're going down to a festival or whatever it is, if they're young. But I do also think that it's a bit scattergun. I prefer to see much more emphasis on how to deal with people who are in long-term drug abuse, such as people who are taking heroin for several years. There's not enough addiction services. People are being given methadone and they're walking around the streets like zombies. I mean, that's the type of thing I'd be tackling. And there are obviously countries all around Europe, like the Netherlands, where, you know, you similarly, there is a, I wouldn't say, it's not actually called decriminalisation, but it doesn't criminalise people for small amounts of personal quantity of drugs, whether it's cannabis. They separate cannabis from sort of hard drugs. And it seems to be working in that way but I just think the emphasis should be more on dealing with people who have drug abuse problems. And I would see, maybe I would probably agree that maybe decriminalisation for the greater good of people and the future that they can have is something I would endorse.
Do you agree with that, Donica? Because this came off the back of a Citizens Assembly, didn't it? This recommendation, which was examined then by the committee, and they have agreed with the Citizens Assembly.
Yeah, and though I heard this morning that recommendation may not be implemented, it seems to be having difficulty getting through, I think, the legislature. It has been tried elsewhere. I mean, in Portugal, from 2001, they've decriminalised possession for personal use, which is, I think, enough for 10 days. They're still very, you know, and I think sometimes there are misperceptions around this, they're still very strong on going after people who are involved in the procurement, the supply, traffickers, that's all there. And it doesn't mean that people can shoot up in the middle of the street. It's still a violation. It's an administrative violation. It's just not a criminal offence. You don't get a criminal record. And I think the attitude is that, look, and I heard a conversation earlier in the show where you were talking about the term junkie and whether people really choose to become drug addicts. I mean, we have a very high tolerance towards alcohol in this country, and we treat alcoholism not as an addiction of choice. We treat it as a medical condition, which people need help and people need to be intervened. So I think it's the same approach here about drugs, that, you know, people need help. And this is the challenge, and Seán hinted at it there, is that, you know, if you decriminalize it, you should be then shepherding people when you find them misusing drugs to help. Mm. But do we have the resources? And the fear is that the resources that we have could be overwhelmed if we started having more drug use in the open and then didn't have the resources to help the people.
Well, Carl, some people were horrified at this suggestion this week that this might happen, that, you know, cocaine, for example, ketamine for personal use would be decriminalized. What's your view?
Well, I think the bottom line when it comes to the war on drugs is that drugs won the war on drugs, emphatically, resounding victory for drugs. And I think that to essentially continue with what we've been doing thus far in terms of criminalization just fails to acknowledge the reality of drugs. Drugs are very commonplace in Irish society. I think it's quite notable that there are certain echelons or certain cohorts in society who can discuss drugs and take drugs without any real sense of jeopardy whatsoever. I think it's actually certain classes of people who tend to be targeted for criminalisation when it comes to drug possession.
So what are you saying? The middle class user doesn't get affected by the fact that it is criminal activity.
Yeah, I think much less so, at least. And I think it's notable, you know, both Micheál Martin and Jim O'Callaghan have come out and said that Ireland is already taking a health-led approach to drug use. But if you look at the stats from last year, you'll see it's actually 8,287 prosecutions or charges for drug possession. And if you break that down, that's actually one every hour, every day. So if you even think about state resources in terms of Garda time, in terms of court time, you know, we're losing a lot of time and a lot of resources to, you know, charging and prosecuting something that in many cases is not necessarily harmful. You know, you refer to risky behavior, but of course, you know, as Dunica made the point, alcohol is hugely risky, gambling is hugely risky, vaping is risky. You know, there are all these things that we are very permissive of in society. And we don't, you know, it's actually very hard to critique drug use in a way that is then logically consistent with the other mores we seem to have.
I want to move on to the GPO because we are being asked what we should do with it. And it's really pertinent today because earlier we were talking about the Lonely Planet review of Dublin's O'Connell Street. And we were talking to Fionn Davenport, the author of that piece, where he said, look, I love Dublin. I want Dublin to be the best city in the world. But unfortunately, there are problems with O'Connell Street. And he talked about the drug use there, about crime, about the fact that it's busy with traffic and so on. But there is an opportunity, isn't there, in what we do, maybe Dunica, you might lead us off on this, with the GPO, because that will have a huge impact on O'Connell Street and the culture of the street.
Yeah, well, I listened to Fionn Davenport's contribution and the person after him, and they were both on the same page. I'm not from Dublin, but I've moved to Dublin. It's an embarrassment, I'm sorry, the city centre. Anytime you have visitors coming, you can't really bring them to the city centre and have any sense that you will have something to be proud of.
Are you talking specifically about O'Connell Street or the entire city centre?
I'm talking about O'Connell Street in particular because that's the logical, that's the epicentre of the city. The neighbouring streets aren't a lot better sometimes, depending on which direction you go. And that's, you know, that's a lack of will, I'm sorry, because, I mean, I was in Vienna last week, for example. It's a country the same size as Ireland. Now, admittedly, they have an imperial history, more impressive architecture, but that doesn't speak to the obvious antisocial behaviour.
Beautiful architecture.
Yeah, but you don't see the antisocial behaviour that you see absolutely there with impunity. There's no police presence that I can see in the city centre. So
the police presence on O'Connell Street has increased. Yep. And even Dawn, the business owner, said that, you know, that has, her sense of it is that people who misbehave feel that they're acting with impunity. You know, that there is not much that they can do despite the fact that there are additional Gardaí on the streets.
Yeah, well, as I said, I come to Dublin regularly from different points and usually it's from a better place that I'm coming to. But no, the GPO does provide an opportunity. I mean, but it would be an anchor. I mean, it's not something that's going to be a panacea for the whole region. I mean, it could be, there's a big debate about whether it should retain its current use, of course, or whether it should be kind of used for something more cultural. I think we need a cultural hub in the centre of Dublin, you know, where we'd have libraries, theatre, you know, different kind of cultural resources of which the GPO could be a part of. But I don't think it's a standalone thing. Okay. I did see, by the way, that they're talking about 500 million euro. And that part to me, it set off the brain of, like, you know, the Children's Hospital and other things that started out at 500 million and whether it's going
Didn't
to stay
end
at
up
that.
There. Anyone else embarrassed by O'Connell
Street?
Yeah,
I think it's shameful, actually. Really, I think it really depresses me. I'm totally in despair when I see O'Connell Street. When you look at any other city in Europe, for example, whether they had an imperialist history or not, or whether you're in Riga or Tallinn, you know, the Baltic countries, rich countries, countries that are much less wealthy than Ireland, have wonderful city centres, much cleaner. And the police presence is just, to me, that's just not what we should be focusing on. The fact is that so many years of lack of investment, it's been allowed to deteriorate. What is on O'Connell Street? Only a couple of like casinos and a couple of bits in here.
Fast food joints.
The GPO is fabulous and it should be a museum and a cultural hub, exactly what you said, Dunica. But the whole setup, and not just O'Connell Street, Grafton Street used to be such a stunning, beautiful place to walk down. There's always a bit of crack, you know. It's full of boarded up retail units. It doesn't know what it is anymore.
I don't know if it is, Sean, because I'm a recent now arrival into the city centre in this iteration. And there isn't, I didn't see any boarded up shops.
Down on Grafton Street, there are plenty of shops that are maybe not boarded up, but they're not being used.
There's always like lots of music. You'll have at least three or four, you know, buskers on the street with crowds gathered. I think the vibe isn't bad on
that. It's not like it used to be.
I'll stick up for Dublin a little bit and say
I do love Dublin though. I'm a Dubliner and I've lived in town before I moved to Brussels. I lived in town. I loved Dublin, you know, all of that. That's why I'm so depressed about it, by the way. It's my city.
Yeah. I think in terms of the conversation around regeneration of O'Connell Street, it's interesting to kind of start with the GPO, because if you're walking down O'Connell Street, it's not as if the GPO jumps out as the problem. Like, the GPO is the nice part of O'Connell Street. And I think that it is sort of a risk, as Dunica pointed out, to make this major investment, like a huge redevelopment idea, proposal, because at the end of the day, we see these things fail to get off the ground so often. And like, I think the last thing that O'Connell Street needs is huge scaffolding around the GPO for the next 15 years or whatever else it is that we'll end up with. Like, my sort of controversy, and I'm not a civil engineer, I should specify, but like, I think that a huge problem with O'Connell Street that could be solved is if we were to pedestrianize it.
Yes.
Because I think the fact that cars are running down up either side of it all the time essentially removes the, you know, you talk about Vienna, you talk about other cities in Europe, they have piazzas and they have squares that are kind of purpose-built for socializing and purpose-built for like social cohesion, a bit of a town square. And O'Connell Street, you know, certainly has the space for that. But unfortunately, we can't do that with it because it is a throughway for cars.
So if it became pedestrianized, then you would attract the businesses, do you think, and the restaurants and the open air dining and all of that?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously there would be questions to be asked as to, you know, I'm sure there would be business owners who would complain that maybe there'd be less footfall because there are fewer cars. But I mean, nobody's stopping their car on O'Connell Street.
And obviously you'd have to deal with the social behavior, the antisocial behavior that does exist on O'Connell Street, unfortunately, as well.
Well, see, so I wonder if you make it nicer first, does that decrease the likelihood?
But also the thing is, if you, do you remember, for years we've been talking about, I don't even know if it's resolved yet or at all, but the Moore Street debate about what we should do with the rebels who were there for 1916, that issue, that should have been resolved years ago. That would be a wonderful place for visitors to go. My favourite museum in Ireland is Kilmainham Jail, and that would be an attachment to it. It's so close, it's on the Lewis, you know, like, we still haven't resolved that issue. Dublin and Ireland as a whole, our Irish governments have just really wasted such great opportunities for the city to be a brilliant European city with Bloomsday. There's so much to bring to the table, whether there's Trinity College, but it's just a real lack of ambition and just lack of care. It's really disappointing.
And as you say, I mean, cities with far less, like Tallinn and Vilnius, have done so far more.
Yeah, and they're very clean
more.
Cities as well.
I was in Prague this year. And,
oh my God.
You
beautiful.
Know, clean, safe, pleasant to walk around.
Not a very wealthy country, but well able to do it.
Yeah.
Prague have laws as well about noise levels after a certain time. You know, I think that's well enforced.
Yeah,
too.
And there's lots of scary
things. There's no
things
nightlife
as well.
In Dublin like, anymore either.
If you
all the clubs are gone.
We were told we did a cycling tour. If you cycle on the footpath, you will get a fine. Don't argue with the policeman who tries to levy the fine, because they will not hesitate to take you to task over it. So, like, if we want to live like that,
we don't
there's
want an
that.
Autocracy. We want the nightclubs back. We used to have the most vibrant nightclub scene in Europe in the early 2000s and late 90s. That was destroyed. There's no nightclubs to go to. I mean, I don't even go to nightclubs anymore, but I used to. But I would love for that to exist again. Places like the Pod. I mean, look at the Pod there on the top of Harcourt Street. It was amazing. And now it's Pret-a-Manger, which is so depressing.
I think that's what we need to do with the GPO, obviously, is just turn it into a massive nightclub.
Yeah, but then Jim O'Callaghan would shut it down. It would be another Pret-a-Manger. So, no, thank you.
All right, that's that sorted. Now, we wanted to talk about this study that shows that children have ambitions to be social media influencers when they grow up. Is this all your students, Dunica?
No.
That's what you're pushing for, though, isn't it?
I mean, I wasn't surprised. I mean, you know, as long as humans have been around, they've tried to, you know, be acknowledged, be recognized, to participate in the public sphere.
And but the change is that the dream now isn't to be a pop star or an astronaut, which was always the dream, you know, for generations. Now it's, I want to be a social media influencer. Does it depress you at all?
Not really, as I said, because it's just a manifestation of a trend in society. I mean, I think we always kind of are suspicious of new technologies. I mean, some would argue, I don't say I subscribe to it fully, that this is kind of the democratization of influence, that instead of having these filters or middle people who decide that you get a platform, you can just go out there. And if enough people think you've got something to say, they will subscribe, they will follow, and there will be a snowball effect. And that's a good thing. The kind of potential criticism of that is that it's not particularly well regulated, and therefore you can get people saying all sorts of nonsense, and that can attract a lot of attention mm-hmm. for the wrong reasons. So, but the whole celebrity culture and you know, being famous for the sake of being famous, you know, that's been there for a while. I mean, the thing, the elephant in the room perhaps is the social media ban, which Australia has introduced, which the UK now, one of Keir Starmer's last initiatives, there's been talk about it here.
It doesn't
so
work.
Whether they have access to social media in the coming years is a question.
Yeah, Carl, what do you think about it? Like, the aspiration used to be, I will study science for years and years and years and become an astronaut, whereas now I want to go on Instagram and sell stuff.
Well, I suppose, you know, how many of those kids did end up becoming astronauts?
Very
you know
few.
What I mean? But I, you know, to me, it really is just a signal of changing mediums in terms of how we consume media. You know, I think that movies and TV series are kind of on their way out. So you have fewer kids aspiring to be actors or pop stars. And, you know, TikTok and YouTube is the primary medium by which young people are consuming stuff. So that's where they want to be. So to me, in that sense, it's not confusing at all. I don't think it's mysterious. I also think part of it is that when, you know, I was younger, and when I think the rest of us were younger, we looked up to maybe our parents or other professions, because I think professions used to interact with the material world a lot more. Like, you could imagine, for example, if someone was whatever, a farmer or worked in a factory or worked as a carpenter or this or that, people used to have more jobs like that. Whereas now, you know, so much of work is done just behind a computer. So it's not really appealing.
It's not inspiring.
Yeah, it's not super appealing for kids to, and I know the way they actually did this study was by having kids draw the profession that they were interested in doing. It's very hard to draw most modern professions beyond literally just someone hunched over a computer with their head in their hands yeah. crying their eyes. So, you know, I sympathize with the kids, but, and I think, as you know, Donica made the point, the worry really is more, it's more broad with social media. I don't think it's really worrisome the kids want to be influencers. Kids have always wanted to be kind of famous and these kind of things. But what is worrying is that social media is so unregulated, and I think it has the potential to become so toxic and so hazardous for the people who use it. And I think that's a bigger concern. Mm-hmm.
Really briefly, because I'm out of time, Shauna.
Yeah, I think that's 100% right. Yeah,
is there a move to, from putting your Europe correspondent hat on, is there a move now towards these bans in Europe or towards greater regulation?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because countries seem to be doing their own thing, because the EU and Europe is not regulating enough, because obviously they're coming under huge pressure from the United States, from the likes of Meta. The White House administration that exists right now are really, you know, basically in bed with Meta and TikTok and all that kind of stuff. So when the EU is trying to regulate, they're coming under huge pressure not to do that, because obviously they don't want, they see it as a, you know, a ban on freedom of expression, which is rich coming from the White House. But the EU is trying to regulate, whether it's around services or content for children, and we'll see how far it goes. But I think the other thing is about the social media thing. You can totally understand why kids might want to engage in it, but that has to be regulated, because you see those kids in Doha in the Middle East, when they were trying to talk about what was happening with the Iran war, they were basically told, we'll take your license away.
Yes.
You get people getting paid $10,000 for saying something nice about Israel. So there has to be huge regulation about that.
Listen, thank you all very much. That was a fascinating chat. Donica back on, Shauna Murray and Carl Kinsella.
The Clare Byrne Show with Aviva Insurance. Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.